And welcome into the Tuesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. And as always, taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe Rex Road. How are we doing? What's going on?
Just trying to get this mic worked out here.
And you did.
Is my mic working?
Your mic is working.
Okay. It doesn't sound good in my earphones. Sorry. I'm good, man.
You're on the
how
air.
How you doing?
Good.
How we doing?
We're doing great. Elijah, how are you?
A lot less trouble than what Joe's having with his microphone.
No, that's good.
And with mine.
Is this where that, whoever's watching right now, whoever, is that where that goes? It doesn't
yeah, that's
seem
good.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, it looks good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Get the mic
job.
Flag towards the camera.
Right.
Some branding going on here.
Yep.
Yeah. See, it's strategic.
But you got to, you know, this is some branding too. Like, you know, got to make sure as much of that comes through too.
Yeah.
And your Pixies shirt specifically.
That's true. Great album, Doolittle by the Pixies.
Greg Wyszynski would approve.
How many shirts do you have with musical artists and or albums on them?
Not enough. I mean, I used to have a Guns N' Roses, that's gone. I used to have an REM, that's gone. I need more. Like, if I could wear a band shirt every day, I'd be happy.
I'm sure there's Creed shirts somewhere we could find for you.
Hey, you get me a Creed shirt, I will make one of those little, like, red circles with the line through it. I'll wear it all over town.
Jeez. All right.
I know. I feel like I'm a little bit too mean. By the way, I've been talked out of live being in the triumvirate of suck. You know,
okay.
I've got some friends who have actually sent me some live songs. They're like, yeah, you are too hard on live. So I've taken them out of the triumvirate of suck.
Okay. Have you replaced
them?
It
was Bush, Creed, Live. I have replaced them. So it's Bush, Creed, Blink. Okay. You guys have made me realize how much Blink 182 sucks. I forgot how much they suck. So now they are in the triumvirate of suck.
Okay. All righty.
Bush Creed Live is now replaced by Bush Creed Blink, BCB, or BBC, Bush Blink Creed, if you will.
Maybe so.
If you like.
Well, you didn't really see Creed play live, but you did see Scott Stapp play live.
I mean, basically,
so
right?
So you basically saw him play live.
I mean, like, the dude who wrote the stuff and sings the songs, and then, like, whoever was playing the three chords, and, yeah, I mean, I basically saw Creed. It was amazing.
Okay, then. There you go.
That's modern Creed.
They ought to get out of the triumvirate of suck.
That alone. Oh, they are spearhead. They are leading
firmly
the charge.
Firmly entrenched in that way. But those L.A. Clippers staying alive last night. I thought they were going to be done heading into this game. Paul George goes for 41 last night, and they stay alive, holding off elimination.
Reggie Jackson, like, it's just amazing. Reggie Jackson.
What can't the guy do?
Know.
You know, hit 500-plus career homers, save the Clippers season.
Yeah, right, nice. Right. Mr. Very October well and Mr. soon-to-be July. There's another, like, for Pistons fans, like, huh? Where was this? I mean, at times he was actually pretty good for them.
But. I mean, that's what he is, too. He's a streaky shooter.
Yes.
And what we say yesterday, the Clippers are going to have to make 40% of their threes. They're going to have to just get hot, you know, and survive the Suns. The Suns are just a better team right now.
Yeah.
I think Marcus Morris was, what, 8 for 10 from the field in the first half, too, when they got on that. They were up 10 to 12 points consistently throughout the first half, you know. So that's what it took. It took Marcus Morris playing out of his mind. It took big boy minutes from DeMarcus Cousins that they actually finally got with
Zubac. He didn't foul out. Yeah.
He didn't foul out. He didn't get teed up.
It's a pretty good night for DeMarcus Cousins.
Win.
Last night was the ultimate best case scenario for the Los Angeles Clippers, and they have delayed their elimination by one game.
Yes, they have. We'll see what happens in Game 6 in that series. We'll have a lot more to say today as well. About game one of the Stanley Cup final last night and some news yesterday for the Nashville Predators. All that coming up a little bit later in the show as well. But we begin today with Vanderbilt. They win in game one of the College World Series final. They take down Mississippi State 8-2 in a very interesting beginning of the game. Joe Rexrode, Jack Leiter gives up a home run in the top of the first inning. That crowd was going nuts in Omaha, and I would say, just based on watching it through the television screen, the percentage was probably at least 80% Mississippi State. I mean, there are a lot of Mississippi State fans there, and they got out to that 1-0 lead. That place was going nuts, and I thought, oh, boy, this could be a very interesting environment for Vanderbilt to try to handle. And then Christian McLeod was on the mound for Mississippi State in the bottom of the first, and that did not go well. He allowed 4. Vanderbilt ultimately scores 7 in the first inning, and the game pretty much over at that point. When you give Jack Leiter at that point a 6-run lead, good luck coming back if you're any team in America.
Yeah, so what did Vanderbilt, what did they end up with? Did they still end up with like 4 hits? Maybe they got 5. Maybe they got 5 hits.
I believe they had, yeah, 5 but total.
That they had, yeah. 7 runs on, you know, on 3. So it's still, it wasn't like all is, you know, been turned around offensively, but hey, timely hitting. Obviously, you know, CJ Rodriguez with a big one. Jason Gonzalez with the homer that was kind of the kill shot.
Yeah.
They had some really good at-bats in there, and then they just had some taking advantage of a pitcher who was just all over the place, hits 2 batters, and, you know, it was a meltdown because, yes, that place, I mean, I saw someone tweet out a picture, and it was like it's 96% or something like that. It's not that. And I remember, you know, 2 years ago, for sure, Vanderbilt had, I would say, I mean, they had like 40% of the stadium. But it does seem, I agree with you, it seems like 80-20 seems like a good, you know. I mean, that's going to overwhelm the noise if it's 80-20. And I think Vanderbilt fans still have a decent chunk, but yeah, man, it is a home game. Those people have traveled, and boy, were they disappointed. Did the noise level just change from the, like, if it was just a close game, what would it have been like?
But, well, I mean, and you know, I think Jack Leiter would have handled it fine. I mean, he's pitched in some hostile environments, and honestly, he just looks like he's got stuff where maybe he thrives off that. But, I mean, you get to through the bottom of the first and it's 7-1. Like, what do you have to make noise about the next inning if you're Mississippi State? You've just been shell-shocked at that point.
Yeah, I'll give him credit. I mean, first of all, it was big for him. He has 2 shutdown innings right after that. The next one is huge. He goes 1-2-3, and then he strikes out the side the next inning. Give Mississippi State credit for, like, battling and trying to, you know, and they got him a little bit, and I think he kind of lost a little bit of edge on his breaking ball. And they were kind of getting to him a little bit, but then you get some big defensive plays, and ultimately the guy was just gold in this thing. He should be 2-0 in this thing because he should have gotten, you know, a run or two against NC State. But 14 innings, 23 strikeouts in Omaha.
It's not bad.
Just tremendous. And then Vanderbilt's able to only use 1 guy to the bullpen, Nick Maldonado, who also has been great, by the way, and was just lights out. So they're in pretty good shape here. Heading into tonight, which, by the way, am I reporting this?
I don't know.
I'm not quite reporting this, but I'll call a shot right now.
Okay.
It'll be Christian Little tonight.
Okay.
It'll be Christian Little.
I like it.
And I think that's the right move. He has looked better than Patrick Riley. They're both freshmen, and Riley was ahead of him, but Little has moved past him, and you got to go with your best.
So what's the... what's an ideal amount of innings for Christian Little tonight? If he can get through 4? He got through 3 the first time.
Yeah, 4 or 5 would be great. Anything beyond that would be like, whoa, what's going on with this kid? Even if you can just feel – if you're fine in the game after 3 and can move on. I mean, you've got you know, a lot of leeway now. Of course, you start getting into that bullpen, then you lose the game. Now you – I mean, I think Maldonado's probably out tonight.
Yeah.
But then again, look at the other side's pitching.
Yeah.
I mean, now they have more depth. They have more arms in the bullpen. So they are more built for some of this stuff. But when you get 2/3 of an inning from your second best starter and your top starter is sort of iffy for the third game, it's not great.
Well, I guess, and our buddy Jay Levin pointed this out on Twitter last night too. I mean, I guess if it gets to a game 3, maybe you can go back to McLeod at some point, considering that he only pitched 2/3 of an inning last night. So
yeah,
I guess maybe he's still on the table for them, maybe today if they need him. But, I mean, I did kind of feel bad for him last night. I mean, he allowed 4 runs. According to the broadcast, I think he was the first starting pitcher in College World Series history to not make it out of the first inning. He did not have a good outing the time before that either in the College World Series, and you could see it on McLeod's face. I mean, when he hit that first batter on the foot, which apparently was like the world's most difficult thing to figure out, that he got hit on the foot with this umpiring crew last night, which I just continue to be flabbergasted by. I mean, there were some ball strike calls last night.
Oh yeah,
where I was just like, that ball was 2 feet off the plate, and you just called a strike.
Strike zone.
It was unbelievable.
And then you're getting squeezed on some stuff that I swear is basically down the middle. I had no idea what the strike zone was.
I guess apparently this is just a college baseball thing. So I guess I've got to get used to that, because it's been all tournament long. These umpires are atrocious, and I can't believe that this is the best that you've got to offer in college baseball, top level college baseball. But apparently it is, because it's every game, it's every crew. So I guess that's just something you're going to have to get used to at this point. But I did feel bad for Christian McLeod, because you could see on his face. I mean, that was unraveling quickly, and there was nothing he was going to do to stop it.
I would have liked to see Lamonis, like, give him a little pat on the back with ball from him. He's like, give me that ball. Get out of the dugout.
You leave.
But, you know, I mean, you're losing that game right away. Now, I believe they said this on the broadcast, and I thought this 100% going into. And actually, it's funny, because it reminds me of 2 years ago with my Michigan fan friends who were like, you know, what can Michigan beat Vanderbilt? And I'm like, well, you better win the first game, because the pitching matchups, Rocker's going the next day, and the two pitching matchups after this are not good for you, so you better win the first game. And Michigan did, and they didn't win another game. And I certainly think game one was the game Vanderbilt had to get.
Agreed.
With Leiter, knowing you have Leiter for the full start, you got to win that game. So, you know, Mississippi State, obviously you're playing for to extend the season a game. I mean, this is going to be potentially a wild one tonight. And who knows with the freshmen. I mean, that crowd, I think, can make a difference if you don't have a dominant, you know, force on that mound for Vanderbilt. So there's still a long way to go to get this done for Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt one win away now from back-to-back national titles at the College World Series. We're off and running here today on Robbie and Rex Road as well. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll continue the discussion on the Vandy boys when we come back. What's it going to take for Vanderbilt to close it out tonight and win their second consecutive national championship? We'll get to that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. What a first inning last night for the Vandy boys. Gonzalez with the bomb to make it 7-1 in the inning. Vanderbilt 7 runs in the bottom of the first. They're up 7-1 after one. And when you give Jack Leiter a 6-run lead, more often than not, you're going to be in pretty good shape in the game. And Vanderbilt was. They lead this best of three series 1-0 with an opportunity tonight to close it out and win their second consecutive national title, and their third since 2014. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe, it was pretty incredible to watch the bottom of that first inning take place. First off, when Enrique Bradfield gets on base, I mean, he just messes with you. I mean, you saw them. I mean, they were throwing over there. I didn't count, so I need to go back and count, but I bet they threw over to first base 7 times in the next at-bat while Bradfield was on base. He just poses so many problems, and he did ultimately end up stealing, but it was kind of a hit and run anyway, so it didn't matter. But I think that was kind of the first step of Christian McLeod being off his game in the bottom of the first inning, and then it continued to unravel from there. Two people hit by a pitch, and then Gonzalez with the home run after the pitching change to make it 7-1. We talked yesterday on the show about, hey, you're going to need some timely hits against Mississippi State. You're going to need your bats to come alive and offensively to be much more dangerous than they've been so far in this tournament. And at least for one inning yesterday, Vanderbilt absolutely was that. We had a really good job by the Doors offense in the bottom of that first inning.
That did make it 7-1, right?
It did.
Yeah, Ravitch said 6-1. I just realized he bombed it on the broadcast.
It was 7, I promise.
Come on, Carl. That's okay. Still a good broadcast. And, yes, very timely, and I agree with you. We were sitting at home, actually, and I was telling Brennan this. I'm like, see, right now, I don't know if he's – because he loves Enrique Bradfield. I'm like, I don't know if he's going to get a steal, but right now he's winning for them because your pitcher is completely distracted by him. And that's probably going to – doesn't always cost him, but a lot of times you see that cost a pitcher. It's one of those times when dad looks smart.
That's right.
Because, and you know, again, you know, give it all to Bradfield getting on, but that's big, and it just changes things. And then all of a sudden the control's lost. And, I mean, C.J. Rodriguez just
– it's a big hit.
That's a big, big hit in that situation. I mean, they still end up – yeah, so they end up with, you know, with five hits. Nothing to – I mean, it was – they were – the Mississippi State bullpen did a really good job against them for a lot of that game. And you see that sometimes, too, when a team has an outburst and it's sort of like you're in – you know, it's a, you maybe lose a little bit of aggressiveness at the plate or whatever it is. But it was still a step forward for them to get that. The Gonzalez big bomb. Isaiah Thomas gets you an RBI. That was also big, you know, to have him back in lineup. And also, by the way, hey, did you see the top 10? Did he make the top 10 with that diving
catch? I didn't
see
it, but I'm sure he did. He had to have. That was a great catch by Isaiah Thomas last night.
It was a real nice heads-up tag, too, to go from first to second. But, yeah, that was a heck of a play. But, yeah, so that's also another part of this too, and it was asked of Tim Corbin afterward. You know, this the you know defensively, this team's been sloppy in Omaha. They've made some bad errors and some just really uncharacteristic errors, and you got a clean game last night, and that's big. And not just a clean game, that play, a couple others too. You know, when Parker Nolan can't get the ball out of his glove, but he still gets that, you know, bounce pass to first to turn the 5-4-3. That's a big 5-4-3 in that moment.
Carter Young, a big play last night, kind of going over the shoulder, catching one in the outfield. I mean, you're making the routine plays, and that's great, but you're also going kind of the extra mile defensively as well. When you're doing that, you're going to give yourself a pretty good chance if you're Vanderbilt, and that's what they did last night defensively. Looked like the Vanderbilt that we've seen for much of this season with the way they played defense last night, and then also – I know it was just one hit, but I mean Carter Young a big hit last night to make it 8-2. Maybe that could be the start of something today. As he, you know, at that point I think he was 0-for-3 in the game, and he finds a way to get on base with a nice RBI single there. We talked about him yesterday too. Like, you're going to have to start to get something from the 2, 3, 4 areas of the lineup. They did that yesterday, and Carter Young with a big hit. Even though it was 7-2 at the time, you get it 8-2, just to see one fall for you at this point's got to be big for him too.
Yeah, no, that was I think important. And honestly, I've been wondering if Corbin was going to move him down at some point.
Me too,
out of the 2 spot, but he kept him there, so that probably helps keep him there longer. I don't know who exactly goes in if you do move him down. I mean, Vaz keeps moving up the lineup, but I don't know that you're going Bradfield, Vaz, 1-2.
What a combo that would be.
Yeah, it's a lot of speed. That's a lot of speed at the top. But, no, they need Carter Young. But at this point, they need to find a way to get one more win. And at least with some of those guys, it's – I mean, maybe you have a little bit better feeling. I mean, this game, this could be all over the map for both teams from a pitching perspective. So I'm looking for like a 12-10 type game, which means it'll be 2-1. But I would look at this and say, man, I mean, Mississippi State really had to dip into the bullpen. You know, Vanderbilt's bullpen is in good shape. You know, McIlvain, Murphy should be all ready to go. The other two M's. But then how much are you getting from Christian Little, if I'm right that he's starting?
Yeah, and I think that's the interesting question as you move forward into this game today, an opportunity for Vanderbilt to close things out tonight. If not, it'll be game 3 in a winner-take-all situation tomorrow. And I would assume at that point Kumar Rocker will be on the mound. We'll get to that a little bit more coming up here in just a second. So, Joe, as you look at this game tonight, game 2, you know what the situation is. Mississippi State knows their backs are against the wall at this point. We talked about maybe Christian Little being the starter for Vanderbilt tonight. If you could get 3 out of him, that'd be good. If you get 4 out of him, I think that would be great. Is it then just the Luke Murphy show after that? Well, how do you kind of handle the pitching staff tonight if you're Tim Corbin and Vanderbilt beyond Christian Little, if he's the one that starts? How comfortable are you with the bullpen depth that you have right now based on the way things shook out with NC State and the way things shook out yesterday in Game 1 with Leiter and Maldonado and their usage?
Yeah, see, I mean, you always – it's interesting in a situation like this, because if you do go all out and say, okay, we're going to go 3 innings of Murphy or whatever, and then you lose, you know, now, of course, you've kind of got it where you're alternating, I think, right? I mean, I think that was the whole idea last night is, you know what, This is Nick Maldonado's game. It's all him. And if we need him on Wednesday, fine.
Yep.
But now we have the other guys. I mean, look, I still think ideally you have it to the point where Murphy only works enough that you could still have him for an inning to just be a closer on Wednesday. And I don't know. I'm looking through the transcript right now of Lemonis because for whatever reason, you know, not only did they say, don't come cover this event, media, they also said, that, like, you don't even get both press conferences with this stuff. Like, it's just bizarre on the Zoom. And I'm not seeing anything about, like, I don't know who they are starting. There's not an obvious answer unless somebody out there really keenly follows Mississippi State pitching. I'm not sure exactly who they would throw today. Again, I think, you know, I think their ace is going to go tomorrow, but I'm not sure about today. So, but for Vanderbilt, McIlvain's a guy who has done heavy innings, and he's, I think, the bridge guy to whatever you have at the end. And then, yep. You know, it's game situation. You know, if you're behind, then it's just like any other team, you might go to somebody else and save your better arms, hoping that you're ahead tomorrow. But if you're ahead, I think McIlvain would carry a lot of the load tonight.
So that was probably the last time we're going to see Jack Leiter in a Vanderbilt uniform on the field. And what a way to close out his Vanderbilt career. You brought up his numbers in Omaha. They've been fantastic. 23 strikeouts, 14 innings. And, you know, one of the things we were wondering about with Leiter kind of heading into this postseason was, could he handle the moment? Could he handle, you know, the stage when things got bigger in the regional and the super regional and now into Omaha? I think the answer is overwhelmingly yes. He can handle it. And I saw Jamie Benn of the Dallas Stars talking about this last night with the Rangers. Jack Leiter generating a lot of conversation on social media last night. I don't know what team's going to end up with him, but whoever does, they're going to end up with a pretty special dude. He was unbelievable last night.
Yeah, and he's been great the entire tournament. Really, he's been Vanderbilt's most consistent pitcher because Rocker had the one not great outing against Arizona. But his only chance to do this, I mean, it was going to – everybody kind of knew it was going to be 2 years because of his age. He was going to be in college. And obviously you get that freshman year wiped out. So there's always going to be the what could have been of last year's team with a better lineup and those two guys. But, yeah, man, he's done everything that Vanderbilt fans could have ever asked him to do. And, you know, there were some questions last night to that effect. What's it line? And the Corbin, you know, someone asked Corbin, like, well, you know, did you say anything to him? It could be his last game. And he's like, yeah, I said, good game. Yeah. You know, no one wants to, talk about that now. And, I mean, hey, game three could go 27 innings. And
got to bring him in there.
Like, Jack, can you just throw lefty for an inning, man? You know, who knows? But no, I mean that's going to be his last appearance, and pretty strong way to go out. Biggest game of his career in front of however many thousand Mississippi State fans, plus all of America cheering against him.
Apparently. So,
pretty impressive stuff. And yeah, like you said, it also helps a lot. I mean, he was owed a nice chunk of run support after the way he pitched against NC State and didn't somehow win that game. So that helps.
I did think, though, and Tim Corbin brought this up last night as well, about him killing momentum for Mississippi State at different points. I mean, that's just what I think that's part of what makes him so good, is his stuff is awesome. And honestly, like, you know, his fastball last night, it had life to it and it was moving. But the velocity, it wasn't like consistently where we usually see it. Like, it usually is. He's hovering around 96, 97, 98. There are a lot of fastballs last night where it's 92, 93, which, I mean, you're still pumping it in there pretty good, but not quite the same. He only got up to 96, 97 a couple times last night. But to Corbin's point, I mean, there were some big pitches in there right after they took the lead where maybe Mississippi State's starting to rally a little bit, and he just shuts it down with a big strikeout. That's just part of what makes him so great, is coming up with big pitches, big strikeouts, in pretty big moments in clutch situations.
Yeah, and he even talked after the game. I mean, he basically had to switch to really pitching more to contact because he just wasn't getting the bite on the breaking ball.
Yep.
Which is interesting because that happened to Kumar Rocker on Friday too. You know, it's like early on, it's all there, and then it starts to fade a little bit. So he got some big – again, we talked about the double play, got a big pop-up, and he induced – he actually got another – I think that was him. I think that was Maldonado, where that was the one defensive play. Parker Nolan kind of overran that one. I mean, it wasn't an error, but that would have, you know, shortened that inning. But, yeah, I mean, Leiter has a feel for the moment. Someone's going to get, you know, a really good pitcher because he's demonstrated now. I think the big question was, can you go through a workload? Can you go through a year like this and maintain all your stuff? They did sit him for a start. You know, he had a little mid-season thing where, I mean, he's got to get bigger and stronger and all that stuff, and he's young. But, man, I'd feel good about my team drafting that guy right now.
I feel pretty good about that as well. We'll continue the conversation on Vanderbilt when we come back and get to the question of how do you handle tonight's game if you're Tim Corbin from a usage standpoint, knowing that there could be a game three as well. We'll get to that coming up next. Also, an interesting question about Kumar Rocker. All that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing a big win in game one for the Vandy boys last night. Now just one win away from their second consecutive national title. Of course, they did not play and have a national title a year ago. So going back to 2019, this would be two in a row for the Vanderbilt Commodores. Joe, if they're able to finish this off and get this done, two in a row, three since 2014, what does this do for this Vanderbilt baseball program? What does this do for the legacy of Tim Corbin, not only in this sport, but you start to talk about the great coaches in the history of college sports overall. I think you can make a pretty good argument he's already there. How much would this strengthen it, getting that third one, which, as we know, football, basketball, baseball as well, that third one, you start to separate yourself from the rest of the pack.
Yeah, it's a good question. So I'll ask a little trivia here.
Okay.
Where would that put Vanderbilt in SEC history in terms of overall national championships? What would you guess, just off the top of your head, number what in the SEC history?
My guess is four.
I was going to guess four, too. But I'll go five.
Okay.
I would have guessed around the same, too. It would be number two. No one has won more than –
really?
Other than LSU. Of course, Skip Bertman.
LSU's got six, right?
Yep. And Skip Bertman, and that was I would say a legit dynasty in the early 90s, basically the 90s to 2000 with Skip Bertman. I mean, that was – they won five of them, and, of course, Mineri got another.
Florida doesn't have more than two? I thought they would.
Florida has one.
Really? That's
it? In 12 times there. And South Carolina got the back-to-backs in 10 and 11. Vanderbilt would
– Justin Smoke just hitting
– That's right.
Liners. Yep.
So Vanderbilt would right there, you know, stand alone, not alone, but they would stand alone in second after LSU with three. And, of course, you're also talking about then you'd be at a 60% rate of winning the sucker when you get there. Now, obviously, lots of programs, several programs in this league have more appearances in Omaha because, obviously, this is pretty new stuff. I mean, Tim Corbin is not new, and they've been very good for a long time, but this stretch of, like, just being the best program is last decade-ish, right? So, it's a separator. It is. 2-3 is a separator, and I think you find that in a lot of sports. And it's also, you won't find too many instances in history of a back-to-back that's also a third one is within the range, like in this kind of a range, like a seven.
Yeah.
It's 7 years, or is it seven tournaments in 8 years? I mean, obviously, you take last year out. It's within X number of tournaments. So you don't find very much of that throughout history of this thing. So it would be a big deal. And then the question for me is, one, okay, how much does it matter? Obviously, you want to win, so if you get nervous if you're in a deciding game. But if you do win tonight and you just run away and just thump them, does that shut up any of the Vandy didn't earn it stuff? But on the other side, if you're a Vanderbilt fan, do you have a little bit of, man, it'd be amazing if Rocker was able to win this sucker, you know? Like,
maybe.
Would it be a little bit poetic to have Kumar Rocker on the mound in the deciding game and have him win it? I mean, you're playing with fire if that's what you want. You want him to win tonight.
But,
you know, I guess, is that a consolation if they lose tonight that you get him tomorrow?
Well, I think you certainly feel good about that. Now, and I think it was Chris Lee that threw this out after the game on Friday, before all the craziness really went down on Saturday. They didn't have to play the game against NC State. You know, we thought maybe. I mean, that could have been it at the time for Kumar Rocker. Had they lost Saturday, they would have been eliminated, and we would not have seen him again. And we still may not. If Vanderbilt wins tonight, probably not going to see Kumar Rocker again. I think Chris Lee threw it out there that he was the greatest athlete. You can make the argument, the greatest athlete in Vanderbilt's history. What do you think of that? Because I start, you know, kind of going through my mind of some of the athletes that have walked in and out of there. You can certainly make the argument he's one of the most clutch in Vanderbilt history, but I'm starting to look around saying, yeah, you know what, maybe he is. He's pretty good in terms of, you know, all sports at Vanderbilt. He's near the top of the list if he's not right at the top.
Yeah.
And they've had some good pitchers walk in and out of there too.
Well, exactly. Yeah, they've had some – obviously like David Price,
yeah,
just in terms of what he is as a – but they weren't quite ready, you know, to do the whole thing back then. That's the thing. It is tied to still what's around you. Like, is Kumar Rocker right now, is he a better pitcher? Does he have better stuff than David Price had here in 2007 when he went number one overall? I would say no.
No.
But
now, it's not David, that far off, but no.
No, yeah. Right. I mean, look, Kumar Rocker's – I mean, I guess now he's down to seven in the draft, in the mock drafts, tumbling to seven. I'd be – again, we talked about Jack Leiter. I'll be very happy if my team were to get Kumar Rocker in the draft all day long. But – so, like, those things are – it's hard to separate them from also your surroundings. I mean, here and there they've had great athletes in various sports – probably run crappy teams, right? I mean, like every school does. But you remember more, you know, the ones who won championships. And look, if you do it in big moments, that has to matter. If you do it in the biggest moments, that has to be a separator there. And when you have an elimination game as a freshman and you throw a no-hitter, I mean, what else are you looking for, you know? So I think you can make a pretty good case for it. It's definitely like I guess if you want to say in your craft, you know, you're comparing, because again, Price would be a guy. Walker Buehler was a guy who was great. Dansby Swanson was great. I mean, this program has some, you know, some great examples. But if you combine all the factors and you just talk about, did they win another championship here? And he was a key part of two of them, and it could have been a key part of three of them. It's tough to not think that way.
Yeah, I would say so. Like, it's interesting to think about. And to that point, I mean, you would assume if there's a game three that he'll be available at least in some capacity tomorrow for Vanderbilt in game three. I just wonder, this is always kind of interesting to me in this tournament because it's a three-game series. The winner of game one, you're in a spot where you've got two cracks at it to win this thing. Now, as Carl Ravitch and the guys on the broadcast were pointing out last night, recent history says if you win game one and you lose game two, you're probably going to lose game three as well. Like, that's been the way things have gone as of late in this tournament. I just wonder if you're Tim Corbin and this Vanderbilt staff, how do you approach this game, particularly if maybe you're trailing and you're trying to find your way back in to win? How do you approach it with your pitching, knowing that you could have another game tomorrow in game three in a winner-take-all situation? To me, that's a really fascinating part of this equation. We saw it maybe last night with Mississippi State as well. Obviously, you know, McLeod was struggling in the game, but theoretically you'd like to leave him in there a little bit longer to not eat up your bullpen as much as they did, but maybe part of the strategy is, hey, we may need McLeod again coming up down the road here. Like, this is a very interesting chess match that these coaches have to figure out as to how to deploy their pitching staff in games like this.
Right, and that's the thing. It's like if you're behind, okay, it's a one-run game. I think you're going with your best. You're going with McIlvain, maybe Murphy. I mean, you're trying to win the game. But I think if there's any separation, that's where you're like, you know what? Just like one of their guys last night hadn't pitched in forever.
Yeah.
Lefko or whatever his name is. I mean, he hadn't pitched a long time. He pitched well, by the way. But you know, they went to some guys like, okay, we're going to use some arms that we would not have used if this was a tie game or if we were ahead or whatever. And I think that's, I think it's got to be, you know, something like that. So I guess Houston Harding is a guy that may be, you know, going for Mississippi State tonight. Guy who hasn't pitched a ton, but he has pretty good numbers. So, yeah, it is an interesting chess match. And that's also interesting about the whole, you know, you can't – I don't think you can have that mindset of, well, yeah, I can win tomorrow. Now, granted, with Rocker, I mean, that it makes it a little different. But I'm certain Tim Corbin and Scott Brown, it's like, this is – it's all today.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
This is it. There's no tomorrow. This is the day to win the thing right now. That's a lot on Christian Little. So it'll be interesting. But I actually like the way he pitched – last time out, I mean, I know he got too emotional about some of the mistakes behind him, but if he doesn't have those mistakes, that could have been a different kind of outing for him. So I think his stuff is really good. What a story would be for Vanderbilt, too, for this guy to do that tonight. And it's like, by the way, he'll be back next year of his sophomore year. Yeah. So
and next year he'll actually be 18 years old. Think about that. It'd be something.
Yeah.
Can't believe he's 17.
He'll be able to vote a year from now. Yeah.
Going to throw in a College World Series final game potentially tonight. Going to be pretty amazing to see if that's what ends up taking place. We'll continue to take your thoughts on Vanderbilt all show long here on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. When we come back, a couple of days away from a lot of NIL stuff in college sports. We're already beginning to see some of it. Joe Rexroad's got some interesting takes on the name, image, and likeness that's about to sweep the college sports landscape. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Thursday's a big day, Joe Rexroad. Not only is it closer to July 4th, which is one of my favorite holidays, but July 1st rolls about on Thursday, and that is the beginning of a new era in college sports. Name, image, and likeness laws go into effect for some states, and student-athletes are going to be able to start making some of that money. And Graham Mertz yesterday, the starting quarterback for the mighty Wisconsin Badgers, is getting out ahead of this. Coming out with a video on social media with the caption of coming soon, which is basically just a video of Graham Mertz throwing a pass. Says, I got five on it because his number is number five. And then a trademarked Graham Mertz logo behind it, which means that Graham Mertz is about to start making some money. I thought it was hilarious. The reaction yesterday on social media was pretty funny. Most people were having fun with it. There were some of, oh, my gosh, I hate this. This is about to totally change college sports with these athletes making money on social media. But here we are, just a couple of days away, Joe, from the landscape of college sports changing as we know it and name, image, and likeness laws going into effect.
I mean, there is some stuff that's going to be great to make fun of.
Oh, it's going to be awesome.
Like that was just awesome. Graham Mertz.
Graham Mertz.
GM. Oh, yeah. I will promote your whatever you want. I will sign your card.
Just think like 10 years or 15 years ago, Jim Sorgi.
Yeah.
Like, something really cool like that. Just like these random athletes that just don't get like that kind of bub. Like their peak is in college. They're just random. They're random athletes after that. Like
CurtisPainter.org. Oh, it's going to be amazing. Well, but also
Graham Mertz threw for 1,200 yards and 9 touchdowns in 7 games last year, by the way.
He is pretty talented.
Yeah.
Well, so you brought up in the break, you know, David Ubbin's story at The Athletic from last year. He tweeted out again, and it's worth revisiting. I mean, it is great. Like he went the Garantano route here. So if he what is this company? It's a company that estimated this for him. But what could these guys make just off social media? Just off social media again, basically using your following for paid advertising. If Garantano, as of last year, and very, by the way, not like a guy who had, like, you know, consensus support from Tennessee fans.
He did not.
But a very well-known athlete. So if he would have just posted paid advertising twice a week in a year based on his profile, would have made $132K. Now, he's a great example. Jared Garantano's not going to play in the NFL.
No.
Okay. And honestly,
no disrespect, but no.
I tell you what, if I didn't even think about the whole thing with Garantano, Washington State, and everything like that, because, you know, obviously he could have moved on. Hey, hang around another year of college football, because this is your last time of playing football where people are going to watch you on television and you're going to be like a public figure, right? Yeah. Doing that. So he's a great example of someone, and there's so many examples. All these guys we just talked about, not NFL quarterbacks or whatever the sport may be, but they're known because of what they do in college. So great. Now you can go make $100K in a year. You can get a little bit of money to start your life with. I mean, that's what a lot of this will be. But you go down the list. Yeah, you pointed out, I mean, Harrison Bailey could have made like almost $40K off his social media.
Yeah.
You know, just because people know Harrison Bailey.
Got on the field for two games at the end of the year, however many it was, three, whatever.
I mean, yeah. I like how this list of what he had last year, you get down to like Kenny Solomon, make a couple grand. Great. Yeah. Make a couple grand.
Sure.
But yeah, another thing about this, not only the athletes, and I mean, people who are mad about this, I mean, come on. I think it's going to be funny, some of these campaigns, you know, to put your brand out there. But the schools are also just, they're so insufferable already. And it's like so many of the same people who are like, we can't do this. Oh, this is going to ruin college sports. Oh, I.
Yeah.
And now it's like, come to India. Like, Indiana's like, come here, you know, endless potential. And name, image, likeness at Indiana. Like, Michigan State. My alma mater's like, Evergreen. Like, they all like names for their programs and stuff. I mean, but again, what is it? It's
Rocket
all recruiting.
Mortgage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Rocket Mortgage will be involved if it's Michigan State. But it is. It's very much just like anything. It's like, come to our place. You know, trying to bring in the talent. Come here. We'll hook you up with some name, image, and likeness fun.
Yeah.
But, again, a lot of the same people who have just been completely opposed to it. But that's what you got to do. You got to shift course and you got to embrace it. I mean, the NCAA, by the way, with their sort of interim rule here, has basically been like, just figure it out. Just do what you can do and good luck. They had 2 years to work on this.
They're on top of it, aren't they?
Yeah, like 2 years of work on this, and basically they wanted to restrict it, and then this happens. That's how I read it. And then you have this opinion and everything that emerges from the Alston case, and it's like, yeah, I think we should just let them do as much as they can do. I hope that's the way it continues, because that's how it should be.
I wonder if there's going to be like a cap on, hey, Harrison Bailey, like you can't go endorse everything in Knoxville. You can't go endorse every restaurant.
There better not be.
Every tire shop.
There better not be.
Like, at some point, you got to go to practice, right?
Well, that's true. Well, I mean, well, if all the different tire shops all have them, they're going to get mad, right? Like, well, you can't endorse them and us. Yeah, well.
Signing those checks, buddy.
Yeah, I don't know. But there better not be a cap. Now, you know, the whole thing is you have to report everything to the school, which is fine.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fair. And obviously, no, you know, no one wants this to turn it. Well, I shouldn't say no one. I do, but administrators don't want this to turn into, hey, I signed this kid to a deal to endorse for a mill, and now you're gonna get him. You're gonna sign him. I want it to turn to that. I think that'd be amazing. I will say that Rhiannon Pocky, good friend who covered Tennessee, she brought up a good point. Like, you know, I'm all for this. But how much is this going to now make, like, brand, like, a thing for, like, a 12-year-old, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, we got to start getting your, like, what's your logo going to be, you know? I mean, stuff like that will be somewhat annoying.
Yeah.
And at times it will not be probably good for kids. But, again, if you are a superstar, I mean, we're watching Wimbledon right now, you can be 14 in that thing.
Sure.
And then make all the money in the world if you're good enough.
I'm just – one thing that I thought about the other day that I'm interested to see if this trickles down into is, like, commitments, right? So you commit when you're a junior in high school. I'm going to Tennessee. I'm a four-star quarterback. I'm going to Tennessee. Like, can you start getting endorsements then? Because, look, we see people flip from commitments all the time. Like, I wonder if, like, if I'm a coach in – Knoxville, and I know a guy that owns a business. I'm like, hey, why don't you go slip old buddy over there, you know, $600 for endorsing one of your products. He's a commitment. We'd really like him to stay next year. I wonder if that trickles down into, like, high school sports, these high-level recruits, high-level commitments on that front.
Well, is it – so if you're slipping them the money, then again –
well, you know what I mean, but, like, endorsing stuff.
Yeah. Again, like, there's where – like, so now it would be, like, here's the bag of cash.
Yeah.
No, come here instead. That's what I want to happen. It's like, oh, we got a little bidding war here. We've got Pilot Flying J over here for Tennessee and – you know, whatever oil company for Texas A&M, and we got a little again. Like this is where
Dreamland Barbecue for Alabama.
Yeah, there you go. But again, this is where I think. Hey, I think there will be some guys like Terrell Pryor, like when Michigan, Ohio State were going after him, and it was like for both programs, it was like the end of the world if you don't get him.
Yeah,
there's an example of. Or you know, like Jadeveon Clowney when he was being recruited. Like, there's going to be some players where it's like. If you got some cash right now, like this, whatever we can do, okay? But again, return on investment over time, there's a whole lot of guys like that who don't end up being nearly what you thought. So I don't know. I think certainly, though, in recruiting, we know what it's about. Talent's the name of the game.
Sure.
It's the lifeblood of all this stuff is recruiting. And so there are going to be people certainly who look to go through loopholes and use this to their advantage. Again, to me, it's like, why can't we just bring it all above board and make that part of the thing? I think it would be incredibly entertaining.
I can't wait to see what some of these student-athletes start endorsing. It's going to be awesome. Like Tennessee offensive linemen out there endorsing like some skincare product or something. It's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it.
And what will happen is a lot of it will be like the Tennessee offensive lineman who maybe even is like the backup guard, but he's like from the small town.
Right.
And so like the restaurant in town, you know, like, all right, you know, like your local like diner.
Yeah.
But great. And he gets like $800.
Yeah.
Okay. America.
I'm cool with it.
America.
I can't wait to see the different levels of
there's going to be
the Graham Mertz video, if you've not seen it, we'll tweet it out. I mean, it was amazing.
Fantastic.
Just that trademark Graham Mertz logo at the end of it. He's thrown 9 touchdown passes at Wisconsin. I'm here for it.
It is.
All day long, baby.
It is fantastic.
When we come back, we will switch gears. Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final took place last night. Montreal could be in a world of hurt. Is this series already over? We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumpleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.